Hello and welcome to the fourth night of Millennial 2018, and we've got five guests lined up for tonight. And the first one is this, which is traditionalist Western art, also the decline and fall of Western art. But welcome to Millennial, and please introduce yourself briefly to the audience.
Hello, yes, I'm. My name is Brendan Hurd, and I run the Traditionalist Western Art Facebook page, I guess Twitter too, although I've only recently started the Twitter. And I wrote a book, Attacking Modernist Art, which I decided from the beginning was a farce, and we were being lied to. And I researched it and got my ideas together in a way to attack it and to uphold traditional art. And traditional philosophy, and I could see how it was also tying into the civilizational collapse that is sort of occurring more broadly now, even though the art was the first thing, I think, that was attacked and overturned by what you have to call, I suppose, cultural Marxism. Still probably the best term for that, I don't know.
Yeah, and, yeah. So tell people about, I think there's something rubbing against your microphone, by the way, so you try to keep that to a minimum, because it's quite distracting.
No, sorry.
So can you tell people about your background, how you sort of got into art in the first place? Was it something that you cared about as a teenager or what? I know that you did go to art school as I did, so it might be interesting to compare notes on that.
Yeah, I was always good at art, so I was always into it, like, right from the beginning. And I remember, like, in school, like in primary school, even being shown, I remember distinctively being shown a Rothko and being told that this was genius, and it was just the three stripes of colors. And I remember fighting against the teacher, saying, "How can this be so? Like, this, what are you telling me here? Like, this is nonsense." But so I had that opinion right from the start. But when I did go to art school, I went to university. I did for a while get sort of. Is my mic rubbing again, or is it okay?
You know, it's.
Is it okay now?
That's fine now. Yeah,
okay, sorry. Yeah, sorry. And so I did try to go along with it then, I remember, because I was a teenager and I was thinking, okay, I've paid to be in school and I've all these academic people are telling me this and that. So I tried to believe it, to get along with it then. And for a while, I actually thought there was something wrong with me, that I couldn't get it somehow.
Yeah. Well, this is the confidence trick, isn't it? Yeah. This is exactly what they do. And it lasts on people far beyond their teens. I mean, there are people, wealthy people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, and probably even older than that now, who fall for this because they think, well, everyone's telling me that this is clever, and everyone's acting smug with themselves for getting it. So therefore, it must be real. There must be something that I'm just missing. That's the trick.
In that sense, it's even worse than being worthless, which it is. It's actually detrimental because it put me off art completely for about 10 years after that. I was just like, oh, forget this. Like, this is nonsense. But in fact, you used the word smug there, and you were the first one I ever heard use that. Referring to, you know, normies or NPCs or whatever you want to call them. And it's so true. Like, it's absolutely, like, anecdotally, all the ones I ever knew, I noticed that smugness about them. And what else did you say at the time? Lack of self, not, was it
lack self-aware? Of self reflection.
That was it. Yeah. They don't question themselves at all. Even though you've questioned yourself 100 times and you wondered if you're crazy for thinking these thoughts, you can tell they have not even tried to question themselves. And I don't know. I remember noticing that at the time, thinking, yes, all those fuckers were smug, every last one of them. And like, so, and you can tell they're just reacting emotionally, I guess, to things, or God knows what. I mean, they're like aliens to me now. I can't understand what's going on with them. And I do you ever ask yourself if you're crazy? That
because yeah, I've asked myself that many, many times down the years. I think a lot of people have.
How do we prove that we're not?
Well, I think that we can explain most things, whereas the NPC, for want of a better word, can't. All they can say really is, well, this is the consensus, so yeah, what are you giving me a hard time for? That's really all. Or they've got some stupid platitudinous response to whatever prompt you gave them. Yeah. But it's always platitudinous. It's always something shallow, disingenuous, stupid, etc. So I think that's how you know that we're not crazy.
Yeah, I've tried many times to get around it because, you know, with this overwhelming consensus against, you know, we're having this talk here and it should be just perfectly fine and normal, but you feel, like I said to you before, you feel like we're criminals or something just from the overwhelming not solidarity, what's the word? Solitude of it. You know, you're very, very alone in the overall consensus. So you start to wonder if you're crazy or what, but like, there's no way around it. But then you have to think that all these other people are not crazy, but just so hopelessly weak and stupid. But people you know and people you loved and respected and everything, it's horrible, really, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is. Because it's like you're surrounded by people that you love and care about are tricked. But then you've also got the people in this case, the art world, who are intelligent and well-read and, you know, well-educated and all that, and yet still gullible, stupid, gormless. And I would say that their ego, their vanity is completely used against them. And it's depressing. The really depressing thing is to think that the art world was always full of such types, because it probably was.
Well, yes, but like my theory is that when researching where modernist art came from, why it was so nonsensical and sinister to me anyways, it's that what art was redefined in the early 20th century. The meaning was redefined in this sense. That's why what changed my mind after school, I'll tell you, was I randomly in a bookstore, I came across a book. What was it? Tashin or Phaedon or something. And it was 19th century painting, all of it, a large, big, thick tome of it. And normally when you buy a book on, if you're interested in visual art, and you buy a book on books on paintings, they'll be, you know, your classical paintings. But at the end, they'll always attach on the abstract expressionism and the random splatters and the, you know, conceptualist installation. And you'll be like, oh, God, you know, whatever. But you're supposed to associate it all together, as in we've progressed in genius from before. But this book had none of that. So it was good all the way through. And it just snapped in my mind, like, oh, my God, the entire 19th century, there was no rubbish art. I mean, there was obviously bad or inadequate art, but there was no crazy... intellectually insulting art that was just absurdist abstraction for its own sake, or what have you, juvenile looking. So I just realized that something had happened since then in the mentality that these were opposing ideas. Modernist art and traditional art were at a war with each other.
Yeah, I think in some sense it's. I mean, you can say that. You can say that the 20th century is just a sort of constant deconstruction of the idea of art, so that it starts with, you still have artistic movements that resemble the artistic movements of the 19th century, and at least that they're trying some new aesthetic, which in turn has different intentions and concerns, like unique ones to that movement. But the actual form of art is not being altered. And then you get to the 20th century, and suddenly it's almost like a light switch has been turned, and it's a very, very different environment. I'm thinking about the guy with the toilet. What was it? Was it?
Oh, Duchamp. Yeah,
Duchamp.
Dadaist. Yeah.
And then from that, the Dadaist, and then it just sort of gradually increases throughout the century, so that you end up with, well, I mean, the infamous example that everyone always uses is Damien Hirst with the shark in the tank, or Tracy Emin's bed. And you end up with the statement that basically anything is art if an artist says it is art. But then, of course, we don't have a definition of an artist. So anyone can become this arbiter of what is and isn't art.
Yeah.
So it's really just a complete free-for-all.
Yeah, everyone thinks it's just a random expression of personal... It's the ultimate relativism, really. Anybody can be an artist. I actually know a guy who recently went to the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam to see the Rembrandts. And he just came out of there saying, oh, I don't know, I couldn't tell the difference between that and any art anybody else does. And it was like he was upsetting him. I could tell he was just fleeing from elitism in his mind. You know, he didn't want to have to say this was obviously better than other things. And I've seen that he's a nice guy and all, but I know he's into the modernist art. I'm not about to get into this argument with everyday people I meet, but like that's typical. It's that relativist void of just avoiding the obvious, you know... You can't use words like superior. This sounds stupid, but something. What word can I use?
The hierarchy.
Yeah, the ascending hierarchy and the excellence of the levels they reached at the traditional artists when they kept their standards was just so amazing that it blows. They can't allow it. They step away from it. Even they probably want it destroyed in the back of their minds because it does not compute with the. Everything is equal worldview. It's the most obvious example, one of them, I think. But in my book, I trace it all back to the art critics of the early 20th century, particularly Clement Greenberg. He was the first one who took, he seized on people like Kandinsky and Duchamp who were doing nonsense. And he's the one who really added the language, invented the words. They call it art speak. You probably have you heard that before?
No, I haven't heard of that before. No,
it's pretty commonly known. Like, say, when you go into a gallery and you see the explanation for an art piece, and it's this absolute rubbish. Like, you know, it's just a lot of faux intellectualism and $5 words. Just, I've got some examples. I should have had some right now ready, but it's absolute. It's so insulting and stupid. But you know, the average person kind of falls for it. It's like, oh, well, this is. So he did these random red splatters over here because of, you know, Foucault or something. You know, it's this really pretentious nonsense. And so he invented that. And this is where the redefining of art came in. So then art, Greenberg said specifically of Duchamp, I think, that he's officially transcending standards. So standards were done away with. So like that's how, you see what I mean? Like that kind of language, that sort of, you know, it's rubbish.
Well, the thing is, first, before we get into that kind of thing, I want to make the point that when people, as you say nowadays, reject any kind of superiority thing, hierarchy or whatever, that they're terrified of being elitist about art. But I mean, the irony is that the very act of doing that is an act of elitism. It's they are being cleverer than someone who is so crass and primitive as to believe in hierarchy. Mm. So by being egalitarian, they're actually jerking off on their own cleverness, which is like the champagne socialist of any type is somebody who pretends to believe in hierarchy and by doing so asserts their own superiority over everyone else.
Yeah, pretends to not believe in it, you mean, and then asserts.
Sorry, yeah. Pretends to not believe in hierarchy. Yeah, correct. Yeah. And by doing so, asserts is signaling I am better than anyone else.
Yeah, it's weird. It's an awful attack by relativism, which like appeals to your sense of compassion to let everything be art or whatever they want, and then all of a sudden they're lording it over you, and you can't actually bring actual art into a gallery or, like, say what's the competition that Hearst is in, the Turner Prize, I think, isn't he? Is that where he?
Oh God,
is that the one?
He was
in that one, I think. You cannot bring actual art into that. If Turner himself was around today and he brought in one of his paintings, he would not make it through the first stage of that. He's like, what's this, a landscape painting? Where's your fucking naked mannequins and your dildos hanging from the ceiling or whatever?
That, yeah, I'd forgotten about that. It was the thing that won it last year, wasn't it? Or the year before. It was some black woman who'd done this thing with, was it not white men?
Oh, I don't remember. I don't know.
In some way by mannequins. Or I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, they love mannequins. There's been a few with mannequins.
Yeah.
You
see these things. I mean, you see them on like Twitter. There'll be some video of some artwork, which is it's some awful like performance art, and it's just something. I mean, what are the words to describe these things? I feel sorry for the students at some trendy art college in New York City who have to go to these late night performances to be with their friends, and they have to sit through some ridiculous performance and then pretend.
Oh, yeah.
They got some meaning from it, you know.
Someone standing there half naked, you know, squawking some noise out loud, literally, is the kind of thing you can expect, like, or like be a toilet on the stage for no reason.
It must be like being in a mental asylum.
Yeah, I remember art school for me was more or less like that. What did you think when you were in art school? Did you cop on that you were being lied to, or what did you think?
Yeah. I mean, at the time I was enjoying jerking off on being clever, you know, at the time, because I sort of got caught up in that, like everyone, well, like a lot of people do. It certainly suited me at the time. I mean, I was a complete dick, quite frankly.
Why?
Well, I was, you know, just as pretentious as anyone else at art college, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
Although I was trying. I didn't want to be pretentious. It was just I didn't know how to be honest.
Well, we were just kids. We all had to try and try to believe it and go along. We were
exactly. It's like a process of detoxification. You have to sort of learn how to be you have to learn how to be honest. This is something that I've said many times on the channel. Honesty is not something that comes naturally to intelligent people, I think, because you can get lost in so much mental rubbish, and either given to you by your society or constructed by you in your in your adolescence as a defense mechanism against the world. So I think that happens, and it takes years to cleanse yourself of that, of pretension, and a lot of people never really manage it.
No, but then you think they wouldn't fight so hard for it too sometimes, like, you know, even on the pages on the Facebook or whatever, like, you know, there'd be always people coming on, or they might say, you know, they want to defend the, it's usually the same impulses, impulse for equality, I guess. They don't like the sound of adroit opinion saying, no, you can't, this isn't art, it's not good enough. You know, they just can't cope with that kind of talk anymore. A lot of the ones will be lots of people come on and just wanting to say that they like classical art, or, you know, I have to say classical or traditional when I just mean art, because I believe it's been redefined and what we're doing now is not art at all, like fundamentally, but anyways, that they like both. But if you cast, if you say you like both, you're basically casting a vote for modernism, because you have to understand they're at war. It doesn't, modernist art only exists to attack the real art, the traditional art. It's, if you look at the definitions of abstract expressionism or conceptualism, all they really say, using the clever $5 words and the funny little prose, is this is a way of conveying art, which by non-conventional means, often they'll say, or which is to say, you know, attacking the previous convention or skirting it somehow. And that's all the entire basis of the art. There's nothing to do with beauty or tribal expression or confidence. You know what I mean? There's, it's, that's why it also almost exclusively is like leftist agitprop at the same time. Like almost you won't see a famous piece of art that doesn't have a message that is sort of spuriously attacking some sort of norm or, you know, civilizational tradition, I should say, I guess, generally.
So how would you define real art then?
I would say this is a thing, it's very hard to define. That's why it was so easily hijacked too. But I would say if you just look at all the art before the modern, before Greenberg, before the Dada and everything we had since, which was just increasing shock value, really. It was just sort of tied in with, it was very tribal and sort of spiritual, tied in with the myths and beliefs and sort of expressing, you know, when everything was sort of unified in that way, there was no, it was beauty, Platonic beauty values were important in it. And just like, it was an expression, but it was an overall cultural expression that tied in with everything that came before it, trying to work on it and expand it or improve it further, as you know. And just, it's very complicated topic, because there's visual art and then there's also music and literature, and it involves everything really. But it was all sort of evolving in its own way. Like I said, essentially it is tribal, like it is, you know, it's nothing to do with equality or anything else. And high art was certainly the realm of cultural elitists, or say aristocrats and so forth, who had the free time but also the intelligence and the hard work ethic to try to create high art and improve it as they went. But it's more like standing in reference to what the art we have now, and the fact that that's based on attacking that. That is sort of, my theory is we've taken a wrong turn utterly. And it's not to say we should go back to just realism completely or anything like that. It's just, I don't believe there's really organic occurring art movements going on or evolving out of anything. We're trapped in like a labyrinth of thought, just like we are for so many other of the leftist civilizational dissolving philosophies and trends that are going on. You get trapped in a tautology of thought, which is like a maze, and you can't escape from it. So in the art world, it's that, okay, art is an expression of the individual, and that's, there's nothing else to it. Anything can be art, and anyone can be an artist. And it sounds nice and everything, but, and it sounds like it's opening an endless vista of possibilities, but it really just locks you off from the real thing, which is that true creativity, I suppose, requires boundaries. The standards, it requires standards, and it requires, in fact, the more limited it is, the more creative it can be, I think, in many ways.
Right. But before we go on to you know, the decline, I want you to talk in some depth about traditional art, about what art really is. Now, I've asked you to define it. I realize that's difficult. Mm. But you said, for example, that it is tribal. What does that entail? What do you mean by that? I mean, obviously, we all know what the word tribal means, but, you know.
Let's think for a traditional art of any style or movement, say French Art Nouveau, or, you know, it seems French. It seems organic and lusty, you might say. You think of Roman. You think when you see a Roman, you know, the Arch of Titus or an aqueduct, that is an expression of a confident people, you know, with the will to exert force upon the world. Let's say that. And there's no doubts in their minds. They're not, you know, stopping themselves and saying, oh, this is far too, you know, aggressive or self-confident, or which we would do now. You can't, you try to imagine someone now making something So how can I, I'm losing myself here. Let me think now. So sternly beautiful and not confident, not, I should say arrogant almost, but oh, I don't know, I can't think of the word, but
steadfast, you get my, stored, yeah. Aggressive.
Yeah. This, like, without any doubt in their mind about who they were, they're going to express themselves, and they're using Euclidean geometry, the idea of symmetry, Platonic beauty values, which believed in forms above and beyond. This is where spirituality comes into it, too. You have to be trying to reach above, outside the material, and thinking, you know, not just of the material concerns we'd have now, like economy and, oh, we must, you know, tear ourselves apart and break things down. Is we can't ascend too high because it's not realistic or whatever. So, that, I mean, that's just in terms of Roman art. You could say the same for even Egyptian art or any of them. There was just, you can see what I mean. There was a mark of a tribal expression that was linked to the past and ascending along the line into the future. And not say that they can go on forever because civilizations come and go. But that again, that's just the fact that we have been sort of hijacked, and we can see the other hijack, like I've said already, the other cultural hijacking that's going on just leads into these detours of lies that goes nowhere. And I can't say where, when a true art might come back or how we could do it, but.
No, you're jumping ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I know how concerned you are about the decline, and you know, I really, you know, I feel that too, and everyone does. But I think it's important with something like this that we really talk about what art was, should be, and could be, and hopefully will be again, because you know it's one thing to talk about what's going on, but I think we also have to talk about what it is that we're defending. Because that is crucial.
Well, it's a natural organically occurring impulse to create, say, in visually or in music or in writing. But it's, like, what can you say? It's based on the myth of your people, really, and who you are. Like, everything, your entire framework and your morality comes from that anyways. So we look at the organically occurring arts of the different epochs of even European people, of which there was different in many varieties. But what art is, this is the thing, like it's other than for me to say it's a tribal expression based in spirituality and, you know, say a racial impulse of tradition with, that is handed down. It used to be handed down through guilds, art guilds. But yeah, that's really a tribal expression that's spiritual and self-confident.
And and what is the purpose of it?
Well, God knows. I mean, what do you think? What would you say?
I think it's something that lifts people out of the everyday.
Yeah?
I mean, I think that's one essential part of it. It's something that it's supposed to not be mundane, which is why today when you see art that is purposely mundane, that's such an offense.
Yeah, it's a thing of saying, like, this is who we are as well, especially when you have a unique art and it's, you know, you say the Chinese style of buildings and things, you say, oh, that's Chinese and that's what they like and that's what they do and they stick to it. So it's like a unifying, culturally unifying thing, like religion, I guess. I mean, it's very hard to...
it's quite hard to separate them, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it shouldn't really be possible, I don't think. Like, these things, I believe art, science, and spirituality were all a unified expression before. They've been divided up since.
Well, in a way, but you could also say that, you know, modern art is inseparable from atheism.
What? Yeah, the nihilism, yeah.
one thing that I wonder about, because you mentioned realism earlier on, what is the role of realism here? Because it seems to me that you can see it in two different ways. You can say that realism is part of it's like a test of the artist's technical skill, being able to paint a painting that looks as realistic as possible. That's one part of it, and also that it's then the mission with such an artwork is to represent the real world. But you can also say that being locked in realism is kind of nihilistic. You know, like you get these awful dramas now on TV and film where it's realism. It's the gritty reality of life, but then there's nothing transcendent. So yeah. Talk about that.
Yeah. I should have said, actually, when you asked me what art was, that reminded me there is that I believe essentially art is craft. And it is really as simple as that say, you know, you're every bit the artist for carving a spoon out of wood yourself, let's say, as you know, being able to paint a Rembrandt, whereas the anti-art now is linked up with also mass production, industrialization, and all the rest of it. But what was I going to say? What was your question there? Because it linked in with art.
The role of realism.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that realism springs from that natural impulse to draw, which you're really essentially just creating an illusion of something that you see. And, you know, you want to create this illusion as best you can. And all the greatest paintings did so in a painterly way with imagination and eccentricity and so forth. And, you know, you can say, so painting is limited in that sense, as you're always going to be trying to depict something visually. But that's really all it is and all it ever was meant to be. You can have other kinds of arts that do different things and have different purpose, but to then say, oh, I'm just going to paint some splatters and say it's doing something, you know, the same or otherwise, artists, usually it's going to represent some leftist philosophy or so forth. But then it's like, well, why don't you just write out an essay on your philosophy? Why do you have to represent it in these various visual splatters? Like, what is the point exactly?
Yeah, why do you have to demonstrate a sort of chemical formula for acid, as it were?
So realism is linked in with painting eternally in a way, in terms of just painting. Whenever we talk about art, everyone thinks of painting. So yeah, so even though we're talking about a great multitude of things. But like now, say they suffer from artists that don't want to be abstract artists go into this kind of realist. Usually it looks like they're just copying from photographs, which is like, well, what's the point of that either? So I just believe that since we've been swindled and taken a detour, I can't say what a new art might be or how you might return or what we might return to, only that I feel that we're being lied to constantly. And it's really, really awful what they're doing, especially say in terms of our architecture, where these buildings are these, you know, cityscapes we're putting up that are just like nihilism personified, as far as I can see.
Oh God, I mean, I've talked a lot about architecture on the channel, although perhaps not enough. But yeah, that's a terrible thing. But I don't want to go into architecture, because that's too different from art per se, which, as you say, is always associated in people's minds with painting. So I mean, we haven't even mentioned sculpture actually, but let's just keep it on painting. One thing I would say is that it seems that the phenomenon of randomness has to be applied very carefully in art. It has to be employed, I mean, almost not at all, actually. Because and this is the thing, this is one big difference that you immediately see between modern art and traditional art. A lot of modern art is wholly random. It's like, as you say, it's the blotches on the canvas. And like they'll deliberately not put any thought into, should the blue blotch be in here in relation to the green blotch, or the red blotch, should that be bigger than the yellow blotch or smaller than the yellow blotch? I mean, you know, it has implications. that doesn't even come into it, whereas you can tell that with any traditional artwork there is a tremendous amount of agonizing that has gone into every aspect of the painting. Really nothing about it is random.
No,
and I'm not even sure that randomness has any part to play in this. I don't really know.
Well, there's abstraction, say like impressionists, or say Turner himself, they wandered into sort of abstraction, but that's only because they were absolute masters of skill and technique, and they can do what they wanted. They became so eccentric and able to imbue it with their own personal imagination that they could create these new worlds in a way. But you can tell, you can see it, like I can describe it objectively, that they were master painters, and they were able, and like, it wasn't just that they were just like, you know, say even Picasso, many of his paintings, they could have been done in an hour, you know what I mean? Like, and let's say, I know Picasso has some good early paintings and so forth, but really Turner could paint you a Picasso in about half an hour, and Picasso could not paint a Turner if you gave him his entire lifetime. So there's the definition of genius is really how far away you are from the work of children or animals or something, right?
Well, you must have heard about these things where, like an elephant.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny. I'll explain it for the audience because they might not have heard of this. But it's, as I remember it, I think this has actually been done several times as an experiment. But an art critic would be presented with a canvas and be asked to appraise it. And then it would be revealed after that the painting was actually painted by an elephant. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, You know, I don't like trickery and so on, but playing a trick on someone, but that is hilarious because it really should reveal to the art critic the depths of his gormlessness, his stupidity.
You know? In my book, I use the example of the monkey. There was a monkey that did some paintings, and some guy put him on an exhibit and claimed it was by this French artist, Pierre Brasseau. And there was just the criticism was just, oh, this is the best thing. Like, this is the hot new artist. And when he revealed after it was a monkey, at least one of them said, still the best painting at the exhibit or something like that. He didn't give a shit. This is the void we're in of relativism, where it's like, who cares, this monkey? It's great.
The chimpanzees one down the corridor and so on.
But you can see how it ties into everything else that came since, where they're attacking, everything becomes formless in this void. You know what I mean? Like, since then, they've attacked philosophy and law, and now even, you know, whatever, gender roles, everything just is formless and dissipates. But art was the first thing. And in a way, I think, you know, it was the greatest victory, because with the art we have now, it's very hard to see, you know, young people especially going around the city, and or if they go into a gallery and they see the TV playing static and they wonder, what the hell's going on? Like, what's worth preserving here? What's the value of this?
Yeah, absolutely. That should be the sort of fulcrum of their culture. It should be where they can go to see the quintessence of what their society is all about.
It should be apex art in there.
And there's nothing there. It's just a sort of celebration of meaninglessness.
Yeah.
So it is very depressing. Here are some comments that I spotted in the live chat. I wonder what you would say about them. And I'm sorry to other people who have written very good comments, but I can't read everything and take part in the conversation. So my apologies. Yeah. Here's one. Relativism in art was already gaining ground around the end of the 19th century. Aestheticism was an important precursor. What would you say about that?
The first abstract painter, they say, is Kandinsky, and he was 19th century. But it wasn't, I don't know how really popularized it all really became before Greenberg, and the criticism really explained it into reality. And, you know, people say, like, say in my book, if you get a modern art history book, they will claim that Romanticism and Art Nouveau and Art Deco are all modernism, and everything was leading into what we call modernism, the abstract paintings, you know, Jackson Pollock and so forth, even though you can put a Pollock beside a romantic painting and you cannot see the link visually yourself. And this is part of the lie. They use association to give themselves credence by saying, oh, this was actually also part of us. And, you know, what can you do in hindsight? These artists are all long dead. It's like using Turner for the Turner Prize. You know, he can't object, even though I'm sure he would hate what they're doing. So in my book, I had the option really of saying it's all postmodernism, which is what's his name would do that. What's that Canadian guy, that cucky guy, Jordan Peterson, like philosophically, he called it everything's postmodernism. But really, it was modernism was the first absurdity. It's just that people don't want to use that word because they think, oh, what about Art Nouveau and Art Deco and so forth? But really, you need to excise those from it and just look at the first nonsensical stuff, the Dada, Kandinsky, you know, then the Cubists and so forth, and just say, okay, they had a whole new philosophy, which is bad.
Yeah. Okay, here's another one. Was Impressionism the last true manifestation of the Western soul on a canvas before it came crumbling down?
It was very good, but I would say there was still some good, not all of them, but a lot of good Art Deco paintings. And there's been some art since that is good, but I also believe you require the entire, your entire society needs to help you out if you want to create true high art, like say a Beethoven or Mozart or, you know, they had the entire impetus of their civilization behind them, the king, everybody. They were able to work as hard as they could. They were given money or, you know, their fame or whatever to work within the boundaries of the standards that they had. So you require to do it properly is a lot of hard work, and you need to, you know, put them on the pedestal as the geniuses. And if someone beside you is painting a canvas all blue and getting millions for it, it's like, well, what's the point? So I've lost myself there, whatever the question was, but
is that Impressionism?
Yeah, no, it wasn't the last. I would say Art Deco, and like I said, even the 60s, you could see, I like some of the stuff that was going on there a little bit, but that's sort of, I can only say that's personal. You were already very deep in the redefinition of art, so everything was confused, but I would say Art Deco was the last true overall European art movement that was you know, it had its roots in neoclassicism and so forth.
Right. Okay.
So that's a bit later than Impressionists.
Okay. Do you have any favorite paintings yourself?
Myself? Oh, geez, I got so many. I don't know. I'd have to think about that. But, I always say Turner was probably the best landscape painter. Rembrandt, really, when you see his paintings in person, it's like, oh my God, he possibly was the greatest painter. I don't know which one of his that we might pick, but these are just the obvious ones. And, you know, you hear these names and you think, oh, we've heard these people a million times, but when you really have to look at it closely and understand the genius. So that's what I'd say.
Okay. What's your book called?
The Decline and Fall of Western Art. It's on Amazon, right. Self-published.
Right, okay. I didn't know. I wasn't sure if it was because that was what you called, that's what you, the name you used when you applied for Millennial, so I wasn't sure.
Oh, sorry.
Had it related. No, that's fine. Okay, well, I should link to it in the description below, so if you can send me that. I'll link to it in the description so that people can maybe buy it themselves.
Oh, great. I can do that right now. Hold on. All right, go on. Okay.
That's fine. Okay, so we'll wrap it up there then, keep it fairly concise. Okay. I mean, I don't know if there's much more that you want to say about modernism, because, I mean, basically it is just a case of deconstruction, an endless deconstruction. It's like Jonathan Bowden said about the negation of the negation and then the negation of that, and it goes on and on.
Yeah, Bowden, though, he wouldn't agree with me. He certainly had his proclivities for modernist art. So did Evola, who's one, I'm the hugest fan of Evola, but he was involved in Dada when he was young, which, you know, I found confusing. But then I saw an interviewer who was trying to explain himself as to why, and it was all related to how he felt he was attacking the bourgeois or something, and he sort of was smiling with kind of teenage glee. He was an old man at the time, and I could see it was just like something sort of anecdotal that he loved from his past, but it's obviously seems to be at odds with his love of the Roman Empire and so forth, but which they certainly, they would have, someone like Tracy Emin came in, they would have thrown her to the lions, obviously. Like, you know, get out of here, you fucking idiot. We will kill you. But he had his little drawings and he loved comics and things. I mean, I like comics as well, but did you ever see his attempts at making movies, Bowden? He made a movie with some woman and it was really modernist wreck of the highest order. Like, it was terrible.
I haven't watched it. I'm aware of it, but I haven't watched it.
You wouldn't agree with me, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, you do get these defenders. I mean, you get defenders of brutalist architecture as well. And I don't know. I'd like to speak to one of those people.
Yeah. A lot of people come on talking about futurism. Often I get that one. And I do like the futurism. But they were beginning to sort of dabble in the abstraction for its own sake, kind of gimmick. And I always say, well, futurism was good, but the best part of it really was the traditional aspect. Is all I can say about that. But often people say, oh, how can you not like futurism? Because it's tied up with, you know, Mussolini or whatever.
Yeah, okay. All right, excellent. Well, I will add this, and in fact, I'll post the link right now into the live chat. Right, and it's been added to the description, so there we are. Okay, excellent. So any final words you'd like to say about this topic before we close?
What would I say? Well, what do you think personally? Would you agree with me or?
Oh, of course I agree with you. I mean, I think that this is a generally agreed upon thing that there has been a marked decline in art and that it because art plays a central role in society and in people's, you know, mental furniture. Yeah. Therefore the attack on art is an attack on us and it sort of lays the ground for all sorts of further deconstruction. I think that, I mean, you know, most people who, I don't even know what how you would categorize us, reactionaries, I think would agree with that. I think that's just a sort of given. But even so, it needs to be articulated and repeated again and again in the meantime, and until we can find a way out of this malaise, this intense disaster that we're living through just now.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think maybe we have to pass through some kind of cataclysm first. I don't know, but we'll see. I mean, hopefully we can mitigate it somehow.
Yes.
I mean, God knows what will happen.
Oh, that, well, that's another topic altogether.
Yeah.
But okay, excellent. So let's end it there. So that was Brendan Heard from the Traditionalist Western Art Twitter page, and he has a book out, so please all take a look at that. So all right, let's leave it there.
Yeah,
Okay.
thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for appearing on Millennial, and I'll be back in a little while, about an hour with, let me just see who it is. Ah, it's the Ditfrias Sverige, and I'm probably mispronouncing that. I apologize. But I will have a co-host for that one, so that should be quite interesting. And okay, I'll see you then. It'll be about an hour from now. Bye bye for now.
Bye bye.